Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I'll hit another one.
Number two, raw tape number two, 120.
You really can't hear it, can you?
Carla?
Yeah. We're a little bit late, but I told him to continue. Why don't you just go ahead?
Okay, you told who what?
There was a window came up on the screen that said, should we continue? You're late, basically, and I said continue. So go ahead and do it.
Okay, I don't know why it didn't play the intro, but I guess we're live.
Hello, everybody.
couldn't call in the regular way with Skype. So anyway, called in on my cell phone. All right, well, here we are. This is LL Research Radio Program In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. Sorry for the rough start here. We normally have some really nice music and an intro. So this is In the Now, and you can visit our website, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, ringforth.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Okay. Hey, Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
We're doing all right. I got through the operation to put the port in, and now we're just waiting until the 26th when the big operation on the back will take place. Hopefully the last one of all time for one Carla L. Record. I don't want any more.
Okay. Well, I sure hope this is the last one for you.
Yeah.
All right.
How are you doing?
Okay.
Oh, good.
I'm doing okay. There was a death in my family today, so that's my sister-in-law, actually, but somebody I was close to. So that's a sad day for me today.
Yeah. Well, we're with you, girl.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said we're with you, more than words can say.
All right. Thank you. Okay, now this show might not be quite as smooth as normal because my audio is not what it normally is, so because I'm on my cell phone and you guys are on your cell phones, I guess, or I don't know if you are or not, but okay, all right, well, I know the audio is a little shaky for me. Okay, anything you want to talk about first? We have a lot of questions today. You want me to go ahead and go to the wrist?
Let's just go right ahead.
All right. This is from Kuo, April 11th, 2009. The energies of masculinity have their place, as do the feminine energies. Yet the energy of reaching and controlling are fundamentally unskillful for perceiving a spiritual path. The male conceit is that if he seeks with enough vigor and persistence, he shall come to know the truth. Yet the book of life is a book of unknowing. True spiritual truth lies beyond words and logic. It is full of mystery and paradox. That does not mean that it's not the truth. There is the truth that lies beyond illusion, yet that truth must eventually simply be lived so that the seeker becomes that which he seeks and allows the truth to flow through him as the woman allows the rivers of eternity and infinity to flow through her.
Thank you, Monica. There are times when those of Kuo have a way of talking about something that is simpler than those of Ra talking about the same thing. When I saw this quote, I thought, that's kind of what I'd like to talk about today, because I see so much of the masculine style of spiritual seeking not just in men, but in women also. The most clever and truthful song written about that type of seeking is Stairway to Heaven, where, you know, they're talking about you just can't build a stairway of knowing things and knowing the right teachers and doing the right weekends and going through the right rituals of dietary care and meditation and you know, pound. And you think at a certain point you'll just earn it. And it's something that you honestly, in a way you can earn it, in another way you cannot. What you're earning is an attitude. And those who are seeking spiritually have to take their time in coming to this attitude, because it's not obvious. The most obvious thing is to pursue it with everything in you, as if the hounds of heaven were behind you. And when people first realize that there is such a thing as a spiritual way of being and of seeking, and they realize, oh, I want that, you know, the natural thing is to reach for it. That's the masculine way. And yet, in terms of the spiritual, it needs to come to you through the impregnation of silence. You need to be impregnated with a truth that is beyond words. If you're hearing words, you haven't got it yet. If you're speaking words, you haven't got it yet. You can eventually talk about it with a certain amount of authority because you have felt it. And you have spent time there in that river of eternity and infinity. But you can never learn it or teach it to a satisfactory amount, except by simple presence. And I think that is why so many teachers of the East, the Buddhists, and let's see, I'm going to break off here, Monica, because I think it might be good for somebody to call the host pin. Would you like me to get Jim to do that? No, the sign went off again. Oh, well. I don't know what's happening. At any rate, given that we're online, and I have no way of knowing this.
We're okay. Okay, good. Go ahead.
I'm glad to hear it. There are so many teachers of the East, the Buddhists, the yogis, Hindus, that simply sit, and their chelas or students come into the stream of their presence, and they rest in that stream. And they rest, and they rest, and they rest. There's no end to it. The day just ends, and it's time to go to sleep, time to feed the body, and so forth. So the guru goes on his way and tends to his things, and so does the student. And the next day, you sit again. And I've known people that absolutely could not wait to spend the next time sitting with his teacher. No words at all are involved in this practice. And that's the clearest statement I can think of letting the silence impregnate you with the absolute beauty of the truth, a truth that can only be lived. I remember throughout my life that I would experience times where I thought, you know, I'm never, ever, may I emphasize, ever going to get to be good at meditating. I will never be able to clear my mind enough to sit well in the silence. And I found that when I sat with someone else, which I would arrange to do at various times, when I was younger, everybody had a looser schedule because of being in school rather than work. And there were three people, two men and a woman. So it doesn't matter what sex the person that you're sitting with is. There were three occasions on which, for a length of time, I had a set date to sit with someone for half an hour meditation. And, oh, my goodness, it was just enough to knock your socks off, that difference of sitting with someone else that somehow regularized my meditation, and they said the same thing about me. So I think that when you're working on your intention, excuse me, it's hard to get past that busy mind, busy monkey mind. But when you've got someone else that also wants to get past it, that intention is doubled, and you're twice as able to do it. And of course, when we have our meditations here on the weekend, which we had every week for who knows how many years, maybe 40 years, and I just broke it because of these operations I was going through. I was never in good shape enough to do the meditating and the channeling, so we haven't done it for a while, about 2 years now. But I hope to get back to it as soon as I recover from this operation in the fall. And during those, you know, some of those operations just took you high as a kite because of the having so many people there that were holding that intention in common and doubling and redoubling and redoubling that beautiful strength to where, you know, you just feel like you were part of a dome of light that was rising from you to infinity. And it didn't matter if somebody was snoring in the circle or... I know I meditated with one guy in college that it was so funny. He was so eager to do this, too, and we'd go into one of the music listening rooms was his favorite way to meditate, and we'd sit and listen to Bach. We'd just pick something at random, and we'd sit down and listen to this music, and his stomach would begin to growl. It always did when he relaxed. It was like other people have hiccups or sneeze or, you know, it was something you could predict about this guy. And yet we still had incredibly good meditations. It just doesn't matter what the downside is. If you're intending to meditate and you're hanging in there together, it's very possible. When you look at the archetypes, which I was doing prior to the session here with Monica and Jim, I saw the two archetypes that I called to mind. One is archetype 2, which is the high priestess. And it shows the guy reaching towards the high priestess. Here it is. There we go. And he's reaching towards this something that's in a cage. And he's looking at it, and he's thinking, "What am I going to do? How shall I reach for that spiritual path?" And then you go to archetype 6, and this is very telling. He's got his arms crossed on his chest so that they make an X. One hand is holding the hand of a beautifully dressed woman who is very modestly dressed, and the book of knowledge is completely hidden. The other hand is holding the hand of a woman who is very scantily clad. And it's sort of like men who are instinctively drawn to the lowest type of feminine beauty, the obvious type that wears everything as low in the bust as possible, as high in the skirt as possible, tight, and lots of makeup, and, you know, just really emphasizing the lowest form of attraction. And he has that choice that, you know, I'm going to go basically rape this femininity until I get what she's got. On the other, he's got the choice of having to romance and woo and court this very modestly clad and obviously needing to be courted woman. She's not going to pay attention to him with any vulgar come-ons. And that's the way the Book of Knowledge is. It's hidden. It's mysterious. You'll meet paradox after paradox on the way to it. And yet, that is the truth of the spiritual life. That is the grail that we all seek. That is where the good stuff is. And after spending my whole life in search of it and happily resting in the presence of the silence, I can only offer you my life and say this contains more spiritual awareness and knowledge than any way I could have gone, which was littered with books and weekends and that kind of attempt to build a stairway to heaven. I certainly don't look or have any claim to be wise. I can only be an arrow pointing in the way of wisdom. I don't look beautiful. I have no way to claim it. I could be an arrow pointing in the way of true beauty. So, I encourage each of you to woo and court the Book of Life that lies within the impregnating silence that is waiting for you with all the love in creation.
Okay, Carla, thank you. Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
Well, just to underline a little bit of what Carla said, the male type of seeking that is more comfortable with knowledge that can be learned consciously, it's a way of, I guess you'd say, seeking something solid, concrete, something that can be depended upon, something that you don't have to wonder about or doesn't have so much mystery. It seems like when there is mystery involved, that the male way of wanting to gather about itself the concrete pieces of a puzzle is more comfortable there than it is with having to deal with the intuition, with having to deal with things that are somewhat mysterious, not all shown, needing to be, like Carla said, wooed and brought out of the subconscious mind. That's more difficult for anyone, whether it's the biological male or female. The subconscious mind that has this great reservoir of information reveals itself, as Carla said, to one who is able to open the heart and not just the mind, and is able to invite in this unknowing and not be uncomfortable with unknowing or with mystery, but being comfortable with this mystery, because in essence and eventually it all comes down to being one with this and discovering that you have this as part of yourself as well. I think that when one is comfortable with oneself, comfortable in your own skin, that it's easier to be a seeker who deals with those things that are mysterious and not totally outlined and totally revealed, but slowly and surely being able to move within your own being to find that which is frequently sought without, you know, without the being of the self. And it's this quality of being comfortable with that which is unknown and mysterious that is really, I think, the great strengthener and friend of the seeker, and helps to reveal these truths and mysteries in a, I would say, a more organic way, rather than going and taking a true, false, or fill in the blank type of test, which is the basic male way of wanting to seek and wanting to know what can be known and know it for sure.
All right. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and go to our first one. And JP says, dear Carla, you must know that you are the greatest stronger at this time. You do not teach, you do not cry, you do not push, you just present. And the students are ready, they realize that you are it. You may listen and learn.
Are you hearing what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Monica, I hate to tell you this, but you're breaking up to the point where we have no idea what you said. Do you want us to go ahead and try to handle the questions here as best we can? Just type in Skype. I've got your Skype open, so tell me what you would like. I can't understand. Okay, you're writing. This is a very interesting hour, and oddly enough, I was prompted to write you a note. Before I said, I'm on, we love you. I wonder what the next hour holds. Oh, dear. Okay, you stop writing and it'll come to us. Come on, Skype. Come on. We should have gotten it by now. Oh, yes, go ahead. Had technical problems tonight. Okay, Monica, we shall. And I'm very sorry, everybody, but we'll do the best that we can. Mickey, why don't you just act as Monica and start with the follow-up from Kakoa.
Okay, this is an expansion question. If you can, is it going to be easier to incarnate as a fourth density person in the future because Earth is near the fourth density anyway than it has been in the past?
Well, Mickey, I don't think it's going to be easier. I think it's going to be a little more difficult because of the fact that fourth density vibrations and light are interpenetrating so heavily with our old third density light now. I just read in a newspaper article that was sent to me by someone that the neutron is 4% smaller. The nucleus of the atom is 4% smaller than it used to be. And this is reliably tested scientifically. And it just means that everything's more dense in there. So that's actually what's happening. The vibrations are more full of information. So interestingly enough, if we could only be living in full fourth density awareness, it would be much easier because we're getting fuller information. But what happens to us, I think, is that we get the fuller information, which is much more full of the truth about ourselves. Monica said, I'm breaking in to say that she just hung up and called back in. Lots of technical problems tonight with Skype, and I haven't heard from her again yet. So, Monica, if you're on, speak up at any time, and meanwhile we'll just go on. At any rate, if you're capable of accepting the truth, which is, Wynn's calling, to find time to call, which is the, okay, he's gone. If you can accept the truth about yourself that you're getting from these fourth density vibrations and work with them, then it will be easier. It'll be quicker. But if you cannot accept the truth of yourself, if you cannot accept, for instance, say you're going, I wonder what's happening here. Why am I so aggravated with this person? And the truth of it involves the fact that that person and you are exactly alike, at least in part. Uh-oh, I'm going in and out too. I tell you what, people, mostly in. Oh, good. I'll keep on with this. It'll be an odd show. I'd like to see what happens when we get the audio from it, but we'll stick with what we've got, although we've disappeared a few times. Thank you, Monica. Keep me in touch. Keep in touch, and if I start breaking up to the point where it's no good, I'll hang up and call back in, and we'll start over. Anyway, back to the fourth density question. Okay, for now. I think that it's a divided question. If you can accept doing a lot of spiritual work, more than you thought you had to, it'll be easier for you than earlier in third density, yes. If you are in the least bit resistant to learning the truth of your shadow side and seeing just what a rotten person that you could be if you decided to be, then you will have trouble. You can't resist that. What you need to do is go after those shadow side vibrations that are aggravating you. Pull them into your light and ask them to work as part of you. Integrate them and use them. Mickey, you have anything to say on that before we go on?
No, that was quite good, Rebecca.
Okay. Well, moving along.
The question from JP.
No, Monica, you're still breaking up. Go ahead.
Question from JP. Dear Carly, you must know I feel that you are the greatest teacher on earth at this time.
Skip that part. Why don't you
back to the question.
All drive home. Start with that one.
Okay. What we're trying to drive home is the concept of free will, and it got JP wondering, if the Bible accounts are exactly true about Jesus, when they say that he walked on water and other such public miracles, was that not a little showboating, and did not that infringe on the viewer's free will? If I saw a man walking on the Great Salt Lake, I would listen very hard to what he had to say. What's your opinion on the accounts, and why does this seem so contrary as to how Ra interacted with you guys?
Okay. Short answer, it's contrary to the way Ra acted, because Ra wasn't part of third density. Hang on. We're going to have to deal with this, Monica. She said that when she called in, she couldn't hear me, and we couldn't hear her. So it's just awful. All right, getting back to, have I gotten back online, Monica, I'm hoping? She's writing so fast she had to scribble something out. Okay. Yes. Okay, I'm back. All right. Jesus was part of third density. He was born of a woman. He was flesh and bone, and he died, and his blood came out of him, and his heart stopped, and that was his incarnation. Ra didn't do either one of those things. It did not have the right to affect the way people thought in this density. Teachers in the East do all kinds of goofy things to get their students' attention. They levitate, they materialize things in their hands and give them to people. It's accepted in the East much more than in the West, because our teachers either are different or just aren't so skillful. I'm not sure how to figure that. But at any rate, it is showboating. However, it does not precisely infringe on free will. It would make you listen to that person carefully, but it doesn't go over the line and thinking, oh, my God, I must listen to this person. And as an answer that isn't an answer, I will tell you this. I have always had a suspicion that that story was fabricated by those who came after him and was part of the embroidery around the event of the crucifixion. That were it just made it more noticeable. It drove home the point that the people that were talking about Jesus were trying to make about him. Jesus was talking about faith. And you'll notice what happened was that I think it was Peter that got up and started walking across the water to meet his teacher. And I just disappeared. Okay. Still gone. Okay, I'm back. Peter was walking across the water and not thinking about it. As soon as he realized that he was walking on the water, oh, boy, I'm still gone. As soon as he realized that he was walking on the water, he got all scared, and what did he do? He sank, naturally, just like Wile E. Coyote does when he's walking off the cliff and he's walking on air, and all of a sudden he realizes, oh, my gosh, I'm walking off the cliff, and then he's, you know, down, falls down, makes a huge hole in the ground, and so somehow gets back up and gives us another cartoon. So my opinion of the accounts is, number one, they're probably embroidered. Number two, if it had actually happened, I wouldn't be surprised. And I wouldn't criticize Jesus for trying to influence his students. It's an accepted way of doing that in the East. Mickey, anything?
Well, I don't think that Jesus' miracles were really an infringement upon free will, because if you remember, many times it was said, let those who have ears hear, or let those who have eyes see. And I think the people who are gathered around, Some of them probably had ears to hear and eyes to see.
And hearts to understand.
And hearts to understand, yeah. But if you didn't, then what you saw was a different reality. You saw something that was understandable to you and maybe not that impressive. And so it wouldn't have that effect on you to cause you to want to change your mind or your thinking because of what you'd seen. I think that that's the way of miracles. I think that's the way that Jesus worked. He spoke to those who were ready to hear what he had to say. And I think there are probably some teachers around like that today, and they don't infringe upon free will because not everybody sees the same thing when they're witnessing what's going on in their midst.
Thank you, Mick.
Shall we go on to number three?
I think we shall.
Adonai 1. Okay.
Go ahead.
Are we ready? Okay. As irrational as this might be, I have found myself fearful of a less than successful harvest and the idea of the sun actively intervening through very powerful solar flares. I have read and heard that things are becoming more positive and are looking very bright. Is the earth truly doing well, and are the people such as Major Ed Dames, who are foreseeing destructive solar flares, fear-mongers?
All right. I'll have a try at this one. And, Mickey, if you think that there's something that would could be said better, be my guest. My suspicion is that we're going to have difficulties, real difficulties, solar flares and earthly disasters of all kinds, from oceanic tsunamis to tornadoes and superstorms, for probably the next 35 years or so, while the Earth is expressing, getting out all of the tension and the heat that have been pounded down into the Earth by all these successive empires of third density, all the war, all the blood, all the suffering and death, and all the dark emotions. I remember two things that come to mind. One is the pyramid inch, which has always been questioned. Is there really such a thing as a pyramid inch? Well, it's said that we croak on, the time stops at the time of the winter solstice of 2012. What else does? Something strange about this comes from a completely different line of myth and lore, and that is the calendar of the Aztecs and the Mayans. And the Mayans say that the fifth sun goes down at the 2012 solstice, winter solstice, and the rising of the sixth sun takes about 35 years. It's not to the minute, but that's the indication from those two sources, and it's very much the same. And that would be my suspicion. Mick, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I don't think that things like solar flares are going to affect the harvest, because we're talking about something that is of a third density nature, and that's a solar flare. And the harvest is something that is beyond our third density experience. It's something that transcends it to the degree that it has its own reality and is not affected by what we do here as much as what we have done throughout our incarnation and this momentum of spiritual movement that we have gathered about us, and this ability to demonstrate that we can accept the greater light that's coming in our direction as we walk the steps of light, having gone through the doors of death, as we call them. So I don't think we need to worry about things in the physical level here, whether it's solar flares or volcanoes or earthquakes or all that. Those are all the weather, you might say, that is surrounding the harvest, and the harvest goes forth in any weather.
That's true, Mick. Rod did say right in the very beginning of his conversations with Don that it was a difficult harvest, and we would be faced with some inconvenience. I suppose we better go on to the next.
Okay, we've got a question here from Guardian. I wonder if we will follow the exact paths that our higher selves have traveled. I have reason to believe that my higher self went through the service to self path in fourth and fifth density. I believe the higher self has intervened in my life, or perhaps my soul contract, so that I could experience service to others instead. Does anyone have any thoughts on this?
Nick, do you have any?
Well, it's really hard to say. I mean, if somebody feels that they've been on a service to self path in fourth or fifth density, it's hard to argue one way or the other. It's rather unlikely. If you've been on a service to self path that far along, rather than come back to third density, it would be more likely that the person would, or the soul would go forward on the negative level until they came to the mid-sixth density, where Ra said that negative entities then discover that in order to progress any further in their evolution, they need to give up what is seen as the negative polarity, because there, at the mid-sixth density level, it's in order to go any further, you have to see that everyone, including yourself, is a portion of the Creator, and everybody is equally so. So that when you attempt to control or enslave any other being, you're doing the same thing to yourself, and therefore holding back your own evolutionary process. So I would think that if an entity had been through the negative fourth and fifth densities, that in order to progress further, they would continue on and make it to the mid-sixth density before being able to shift their polarity to the positive. So that would be my only thought there.
Well, I agree with you. I think that it's fun to play with these thoughts, and in a truth line that is full of mystery and paradox, nothing is impossible. But usually in evolution, the arrow always goes forward. So I would agree with Jim here. Mick, let's go on to what the Eternal has to ask.
Okay, we have question number five. Is the Confederation familiar with the entity known as Seth, channeled through Jane Roberts? If so, what is the relationship?
I would have no idea. I would not think that Seth, who was an inner guide of Jane Roberts, would have any relationship at all with those of Ra. Jim, you've read the Seth books cover to cover. What do you feel about the tone and the timbre of those books as compared to those of Ra?
Well, Seth reminds me a lot of Aaron that Barbara Brodsky channeled when you and Barbara were working together with Quo and Aaron doing the Aaron Quo dialogues. Seth is a very wise, I would say, as an inner master, and sort of like the grandfatherly figure that's seen it all, done it all, and sharing his knowledge with the grandkids. I always enjoyed what Seth had to say, because it expanded my point of view and showed me that there were other realities. In fact, there were parallel realities. There were inner realities and portions of ourselves that existed in other realities, and we could learn from those. And that was the first experiences I had with channel material back in the early 1970s. And just as an interesting aside, Jane Roberts was the person who was nice enough to refer us to our first publisher when we sent her a copy of the first few sessions we had with Ra. She read them and thought they were interesting enough that she suggested the publisher that eventually did publish the books, and we thanked her for that. So that would be my only thought, that Seth was a wonderful, wise, old grandfather who broadened everyone's point of view and gave you things to think about that you'd never thought about before.
Very good. Why don't you go on to the next question?
Okay, let's see. Where am I? There we go. From Gemini Wolf, a question for Carla. Are your physical troubles due to being attacked by Orion during your Ra channelings?
The physical troubles that I'm experiencing now and that I experienced then alike are due to my having a frail body and there being nothing else to attack in me. I absolutely refuse to be distracted from serving And I have a will that's made out of iron, apparently, and they haven't ever had any success in successfully causing me to skip a step in my service, whether it's channeling or whether it's just living a life. And so I would say that it's probably due to my serving and my refusing to stop serving, and there being those elements in the universe that would like me to stop serving. And somehow, because of the raw contact, I drew their attention. I'm just a bozo. It's not me. It was the work that I became able to do with those of Ra and that I'm still able to do, not necessarily channeling, but people are alerted through the channeling that has gone all around the world. I'm so happy to say it's just humbly thrilled to say that. So, yeah, in a way, they're responsible. But largely, my body is something that is an expression of my life stream. And apparently, the raw contact was kind enough to let me in on the fact that before incarnation, I made plans to have a frail body, that this was not an accident. This was not because of, I was thinking wrong or any of those things that people say who are, say, you're responsible for your own ill health, and they give you the New Age guilt. And I've never liked people giving me guilt, and I don't accept it from them as any more than I accept it from, you know, like we were talking earlier today about Catholics. I refuse to accept the Catholics tell me that such and such is a sin. Sorry, I don't accept that. And I don't accept somebody telling me that I'm guilty for my illness. However, the way my path goes, it would be almost predictable that I would have problems with my body because I came in with a severely damaged body. And I think it's done incredibly well. I have a beautiful, healthy, strong, and whole body, and it's just done wonderfully for me for 70 years now. And I think that it is to be commended for being able to get me through. I may have lost the ability to walk. I'm not entirely sure of that, but it looks like it. I can't walk it right now anyway. But for the other, no, I'm well. Thank you very much. Okay, let's see, what time is it? I need to...
Well, we've got a little more than a quarter of an hour left.
All righty, well, let's hit it then.
Question number 7 from Adonai 1. Have you ever been given visions in your channelings? If so, could you tell us about some of the things that you've seen?
Visions in my channel? No. I am thick as a plank when it comes to visions. I can't think of a one, not in my channeling. There are visions that come to me all the time, and they don't seem to mean anything. I've told them to my husband numerous times, Jim, have you ever been able to make any sense out of the things that I see when I'm in an alternate reality?
Well, no.
It's just not there. So, Mick, unless you have had visions in your channeling, Jim has channeled over a period of, 30 years? He's had some experience there. Have you had any visions?
I haven't had any visions and channelings. I've had some experiences where the frontal lobes came alive and I began to see visions, but I also have never been able to really figure out what they were. They were, you know, like dreams. In dreams, you see all kinds of things happening there, and I'm sure that at the subconscious level, if you got deep enough into your own subconscious mind, there would be connections that you could make. And you'd be able to understand why you saw this vision in connection with that vision. But I haven't been able to get that far down. They seem to be a side effect of a better or greater experience. And as far as I can tell, they're really not that important. They're just sort of, well, again, like we were saying before, the conditions of harvest, the weather, whether it's solar flares or earthquakes or volcanoes, is sort of the weather that's happening while we're having the harvest. And the visions and things that we see while we're having a more important experience are sort of, well, that's interesting, but I don't think that's the most important thing. So that's basically the way I approach it when I see a vision.
All right. This next one is a real doozy and a very interesting one. And may I say, I miss Monica more than words can say, because she has follow-up questions and makes the show interesting. And I've never been surer of the fact that I'm going to pound her over the head with it until she says, okay, okay, I'm good, because, Monica, you are good. And you make the show, girl, because we have a few, you know, things to say. But then you poke us with a stick, you get us going, and we have a really good conversation. And Jim and I aren't that good about doing that with each other. We've chewed up more questions in this hour than we have in any hour show that I can remember. There are times when we don't even get past the first question. Lots of times when we don't get past the second. So you're so good, Monica, and I miss you so much. Okay, let's go on to the next question. And it's kind of an odd one, Mickey, so do with it what you will.
Okay, from Not Sure, what do you feel about the following saying? Once you know how to get back, you've already crossed over. And then they go to a question from the Raw Contact concerning the Tarot. We've already discussed the significator. This is from the questioner. So I'll skip number 13. Transformation of the body is called death. For with death, the body is transformed to a higher vibrational body for additional learning. Is this correct? And then Ross says, this is correct, may be seen to be additionally correct, in that each moment, and certainly each diurnal period of the bodily incarnation, offers death and rebirth to one which is attempting to use the catalyst which is offered it. Can you explain to me how you see death as existing? Where would it be? How is it theoretically possible to die for real, and what would its influence be? What would death actually cause, if such a thing exists, as opposed to viewing death as a very long vacation away from the people you like now until they can see you again, at which point you'll communally decide the next experience octave? Should we stop there and try
all right.
That?
I'll chew on it for a while, and then if I am running out of things to look at within this. It's a nice question. I like it a lot. Thank you, Not Sure. Not bad. Okay. When I first read, once you know how to get back, you've already crossed over, I didn't even get it. I thought, what? You know, I mean, I just wasn't where that statement was. But when I realized you were talking about death, I realized that you were saying, once you know how to get back, like from death to life, you've already crossed over. Like you, once you know about death, you're dead. And I think that likely that's true, but it doesn't, spiritually speaking, I'm not sure that there is any meat on it. It would be equally true to say you never step in the same river twice, which Thales said a long time ago, 400 years before Christ, sort of, kind of, I think. And meaning that you can't do anything over. I think that's entirely true. Even if you went right back to the same creek and jumped in it again, the water would be different. The silt would be different. It would have deposited some things. It would have lost others. Fish would have been born and gone and so forth. So then you start talking about the transformation of the body. Now, for those who cannot bring that immediately to mind, I am one of them, you can consult the pictures in the front of Book 4. And it's Arcanum number 13, The Transformation of the Body. And it shows a skeleton with a side, the typical this is death kind of image. And it is standing in the foreground with, in the background, a rainbow. So that is the transformation of the body. And the transformation of either the mind, the body, or the spirit is sort of the the neighborhood, the what this whole body thing is about. So the whole body thing is about death, if you want to look at it very literally. You're alive, what are you looking at? Well, you're looking at death. It's the single most outstanding, immediate, obvious dynamic of our incarnation. We are full of opposites, light and dark, love and hate, or love and fear, and so forth. You can look at opposites all you want, and one of them is death and life. So when you are alive, you're relating to death any time that you want to think about being alive, because we all know, we have all seen, people die and they don't come back. That's just, you know, the more that you've lived, the more people have done that and don't come back, or they don't come back in the same form, that's for sure. So Ross says, or Don says, you know, with death, the body is transformed to a higher vibrational body for additional learning. Is this correct? Ross says this is correct and may be seen to be additionally correct in that each moment, and certainly each day of the bodily incarnation, offers death and rebirth to one who is attempting to use the catalyst which is offered it. And remember, we were talking about catalyst earlier in the hour, and I was talking about how sometimes catalyst is tough to swallow. But if you face it completely unafraid, and just knock out the fear and just face it, and try to eat it, try to love it, try to understand or at least accept it, and work, you know, with everything you've got, not on avoiding it, but on getting right into the middle of it, then you are causing a rebirth in yourself so that you're not stuck by the catalyst, but you are instead using the catalyst for transformative purposes. So he goes on, not sure, then goes on to say, can you explain how you see death, where death would be existing? Pardon the page turn, I'm trying to do things with both hands. It's kind of hard for somebody like me. Fumble. Okay, how is it theoretically possible to die, and what would its influence be? So what do you have with death? You have the death of a vehicle that has carried you for your incarnation. Now, this physical vehicle is quite real. It is quite finite. And Russians, long ago in the 60s, did a series of weight experiments where somebody that was in the last stages of life was placed on a bed that was extremely sensitive to weight. And it weighed you in, you know, hundreds of pounds. And it was discovered that you lose something like 3 ounces, something like that, when you die. What's the 3 ounces? It is it's the hookup to your spiritual body, you could call it, or your electrical body, or your form-making body, the body that has the chakras that the people that are Hindu and that are Buddhist talk about, and that they place so much importance. The reason they place so much importance on them is it is the body you came in with. It hooks up to a physical vehicle. You go around in the physical vehicle just like riding a horse. At the end of it, you put the horse away, you leave the horse, and you walk off into the sunset on this electrical body. It's your body. So when you die, you switch bodies. And having died and come back, I know that it is extremely time sensitive. I experienced no time lapse between one formation and the other. All of a sudden, instead of being in absolute horrible life-ending pain with failed kidneys, I was in no pain. I was spotless, had no damage to my body. I had terrible damage to my body. It was spotted all over with great big welts. And I was walking towards a temple. And, you know, everything switched. So that is what that's what death actually causes, is for the spiritual body to release that hookup in between itself and the physical body and to go its way. So I don't view death as a very long vacation. I view death as a point on the graph of what we're going to do in this particular space-time illusion. Now, I don't know what death looks like from a time-space illusion where time is simultaneous and all things happen basically at once. I can't think that. That's beyond my ability to think. But in terms of space-time, which is the way we think now, it's that point in the timeline where you cease existing in this timeline and you move on to something else. So let's take the next things as they come, Mickey. Or do you have something to say at this point?
Oh, no, I think this next part might be interesting. We've got just about 4 minutes left here, so.
Okay, why don't you do that part then? You're so much better than I at talking briefly.
If you leave your body behind and never use that form again, have you died? If you leave your body behind but plan to use it again and maintain it, but it is not living, have you died? If you imagine yourself as having a body and simply stop imagining, have you died? If you imagine yourself as having imagined yourself, dream a dream, and you die in the imagination and you wake up in a higher level of reality, have you died? I think the answer to all of these is just how you define have you died. I think that most people define death as the extinction of what was. And as far as I know, consciousness goes on infinitely. So no, I don't think you've died in any of those cases. You may have dropped a physical vehicle, but that's like taking off a piece of clothing. So no, you haven't died, and you continue on, and you get to imagine yourself in all kinds of other realities, and you'll probably drop other pieces of clothing in those as well.
Okay, very good. I have nothing to add to that, because I would have said, yes, you've died, and then I would have gone on to say, but what is death when you consider that you haven't actually died, that the body has died? There's a physical vehicle, and it's dead. But you can always arrange to pick up another physical vehicle. So there's no death of anything except the mass of body and blood and so forth that has so gallantly and valiantly carried you around.
And besides having to define death, I think we have to define who we are. You know, are we our body? Are we our thoughts? Are we our feelings? Are we a soul? Are we a thought?
And we are.
And can those die?
We are, the Ra group, you know, said early on, we are vibrations. We are thoughts. And we are dancing through illusions. And these vibrations that are we are very discernible. The Ra group said that they never had to have a name for anybody, that the vibration that they had was much more of an identification than a name.
Very good. And with that, I believe we'll need to make a little announcement for next week. We will be taking next week off due to Carla's surgery, and we appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers, and we hope to be back maybe in 2 weeks. We'll let you know for sure. And in the meantime, you have been listening to In the Now with Monica Liao, Carl L. Ruckert, and James McCarty. We thank you for listening, and we hope that you have a wonderful week. And we leave you with a little bit of music here from George Harrison.
While Mickey's trying to get that on, I will say, please check out llresearch.org, which is the LL Research website, and check out the Law of One channeling, the channeling transcripts, other publications, and lots more, all of it for free, or you can order it printed. You order it printed at bringforth.org, bringforth.org. You can submit questions for the show there as well. And Monica says she can start the normal outro, and so we go to you, Monica, and bye-bye, everyone. We love you.
Cheerio.